I'm 27 years old, and every week I'm joined by a counterpart. This week, I'm joined by another 28-year-old, female this time. Together, we share a nuanced view on discussions involving relationships, self-growth, perspective, etc. Right off the bat, Maddie, do you want kids?
Oh, whoa, we're going to get right into it.
Into it.
Short answer, no, I don't.
Really?
I think that shocks people coming from a woman.
That seems to actually be the trend. The majority seem to say no. I don't want to call it a trend, but the majority seem to say no. So right off the bat, that is a great topic to kind of highlight the nuanced views of a male and female. So more men seem to want kids and more women seem to not want kids. When did you come to that decision and why?
I think I came to that decision as I started to become an adult. I thought I was going to be, you know, mom, and I nannied for years. I love kids. I taught dance for years for little bitties, and like I absolutely love working with children. But nannying really opened my eyes to what it takes to be a parent and do the whole thing. And it's really expensive. That's really part of it. It's like you can't be selfish and have children. It's really just not an option. And so honestly, I enjoy my time and I enjoy being able to spend time making music and doing my creative things and being able to hang out with my friends and treat those relationships respectfully in my life and have time for them. That just like having kids doesn't make that much sense. But then on the more serious scale of there's just no way I could afford children. And I don't really see a future unless major things change that's going to be feasible. And things are just getting more and more expensive and the world's getting a little bit scarier that I just don't feel comfortable bringing a child into this world. It just doesn't seem like a good idea to me right now.
How has not wanting kids affected your dating life?
You know what? It actually hasn't, because my partner that I'm with now, he is in full agreement that he doesn't want kids. And he also, like, he loves kids and has worked with kids and would be an excellent father. But it's just he is on the same boat as me where it's, this is really expensive. The world's getting a little, I don't know about the world, the American climate at the moment has been getting a little hairy. So we're just both kind of riding that, like, maybe it's not the wisest idea for us to bring lives into this world. What about you? Because you, I feel like, are waiting to be like, no, I want to have kids. I can't wait to be a dad.
Yeah, I evaded your question with another question immediately, but of course you brought it back. Do I want kids? Obviously, my whole life definitely thought I wanted kids. And then probably in the past couple years, I've been thinking, maybe not.
What caused that change?
The financial pressure is there. But when I talked to my therapist about that reason, he entirely said that's everybody's reason is finances. I was like, okay, that's fair. No one's ever really ready. So that's fair. But then I thought about timing. Like in the next 5 years, do I see myself having kids? No, not in the next five. So that would make me 32 by then. I was like, okay, now it's really game time to find out whether you want to have kids or not, because then you got to find the right partner. And then all that pressure seems to be there. And let's just say that pressure is not there and you're a healthy person that doesn't view that as pressure, right? I mean, you got to have it by 40 though. It depends if you want that life or your parents watch your kids, if you want everyone to be involved to watch those kids grow up. So I'm about 60-40, 60% still wants to have kids, 40% doesn't. And then now it's 70% does want to have kids and 30% doesn't. So I've been teetering, totting. And as far as how that affects my dating relationship, it's not knowing that's scary, but the therapist also said it's a big decision. You just can't have the answers, and especially being truthful about it.
That's also something that I think it changes a lot when you do find the partner that you want to spend the rest of your life with, because then it's not just a, do you want to have kids? And maybe you say, okay, yeah, now I'm ready. And your partner says, no, I don't want to have kids. And then that decision really involves somebody else. But it's tough. I've reached the age, like biologically, where I am. Everybody tells you as a woman, they're like, oh, just wait. It's going to hit you. Just wait. You're going to want a baby. And I've always loved babies. I've always been the person that's, let me hold the baby. And now it is, my body has hit that clock in a very crazy way that I like see a baby and I'm like, let me sniff its head. There is like a primal thing that my body is like, have a baby. And like, I'm very in love with my partner that I look at him and I'm like, I'm so obsessed with this human that like, kind of selfishly, I want to make a little tiny version of him. What would a little tiny version of you do? Like, and so there's that aspect of it. But even still, I'm like, no, I literally, it's a Friday night and I was got to go to the beach and have a bonfire. And now it's 11 p.m. and I'm recording a podcast and I'm going to sleep in and then go to a writing session tomorrow. Do you think I'd be able to do that if I had kids? Probably not.
Yeah, zero chance. Sure, you could figure something out, but then that's another massive obstacle in your life. And what if you figuring that out gives those child issues down the road, like those attachment signs being born by you problem solving just so you can podcast after going to the beach and doing this podcast at midnight?
Right.
Yeah, that's a tough one. And pretty much that's where we're both at. But hearing from you, you're with a partner that you see as your life partner, right? And he's the right partner that you would want to have kids with. You're sniffing babies at this point. You're doing some Joe Biden shit.
Give me the baby's head. Yeah.
Yeah. For sure. And so it's temptatious, but it makes you think logically at the same time is what you're doing.
Yeah. I just think things are so, I don't know. We're just like at a really weird time where I know our generation has seen so many financial crises and like I can speak English. We've seen so many declines and rises again and everything. And I know that like we'll recover, but God, if that's not exhausting. I watched my parents go through the 2008 crash and now we're back at it again with our generation. And I'm just like, I don't know that I'd ever be able to own a house that I could raise my children in, let alone pay for their doctor bills. My kid breaks an arm. Were you just out that month? No groceries? I don't know. It's that kind of stuff. I can't logically do it.
Yeah, it's weird. I have so many insecurities around finances, but after that conversation with therapists, realizing that's everyone's concern is the finances, that kind of made me calm down a little bit. I don't know why. Just the way he said it, the way he described it made me calm down and think about all the other reasons to have a kid or not to have a kid. So I'm still undecided. You're decided. And I appreciate your input on that, especially that you have a life partner that you are in love with, that you could see kids with, and you're holding true to the boundary. And so is he.
I'm a really cool aunt, though. So I get to watch my sister do the thing.
Yeah, that's a consideration, too. Can you be the uncle and aunt? But we still have a lot of time. You're 28, right? I just assumed and yelled that out, but you are 28.
Yeah. Okay. I am 28. Yeah.
Okay, next line of questioning, love language. Okay. How do you like to be shown and reaffirmed in love?
Love language, fun fact, did you know the book, the guy that wrote that book, you can fact check this later to make sure I'm saying things correctly, but the whole book, there's a bunch of controversy behind it now and nobody really pulled that out until lately and I just did a deep dive on that and the guy was like super religious and basically was like telling women like, oh, that's because your husband's love language is physical touch. So maybe your husband won't be abusive to you if you just go home and have sex with him. And that was like the whole premise of the reason behind the book. And then he wrote it, but it works for people. So I'm not discrediting it as a method that works. But anyways, every time I hear the love languages, I can't help but remember that fact and be like, oh no, that's where it came from. If you ever feel like doing a deep dive on an interesting author. I think he was a pastor. But anywho, for my love languages, just info dump that on you. Your face is, oh my God. But for me, for my love language, I am very much words of affirmation. I'm a chatty person. And I really enjoy having the reassurance. Reassurance is a funny word, but the affirmation of my partner telling me they love me and those little moments throughout the day of just having communication is definitely mine. I honestly have noticed even more so lately, I think my showing love is very much acts of service. I like to do things for other people because I really am like a caretaker and my friends will jokingly call me Mama Maddie because I will just mom people and take care of people. But that is my love language. That's how I'm taking care of people. I'm showing them that I love them.
So affirmations and acts of service is the way you give love or is that also a way you like to receive love?
I think affirmations, how I like to receive love. Okay. But I also give love that way. I've noticed it's harder for me to give love that way, even though that's how I like to receive it, which is funny. I usually will show it by doing something for somebody. And then when they say thank you, I'll be like, yeah, I love you. And then that's how I play into it. But for me, it's more of the doing rather than saying a lot of the time.
Interesting. Yeah. The opposite from you, which I didn't realize until someone brought it up, is like, oh yeah, your love language is for sure words of affirmation. Cause I do that with people all the time. I didn't realize that was just like me mirroring or wanting it to be mirrored back is for sure words of affirmation. And like physical touch is there for sure, but you can't always have physical touch. So what else is important? Yeah, it's more that words of affirmation. Acts of service is nice. Yeah, top two would probably be affirmations, words of affirmations, and physical touch.
And have you felt that you've had a partner where that worked really fluid with each other? Or is that something you're still in search of?
Still in search of. But what's interesting is the physical touch. It's such a hot and cold one for me. Maybe I do want it from that partner. Maybe I don't.
Interesting.
It's weird.
Why?
This one might be just a lesson I'm learning of searching for something perfect and self-sabotaging. That might be what I'm doing. So I don't want that physical touch. I'm already unattracted to someone because maybe I'm just searching for perfect rather than building something. Could be it. But I've also realized maybe I'm also settling in some of the places. It's like someone's really kind, but they're not matching some of maybe the other things I want in compatibility. And so if I'm unattracted to you in other ways, it makes me not want to do the physical touch part.
That makes sense. Are you somebody that likes to be comforted with physical touch, regardless of it being sexual intimacy? If you are like a friend offering a hug, things like that, is that still your love language in friendships?
Yeah, and that's where it still gets interesting. It depends on the person, depends on what I think about them. Like the wrong person, yeah, the wrong person giving me that physical comfort, don't want it. But the right person that I want that physical comfort from, yes, it means almost everything, which is, I don't know, it might be a therapy talk for me to figure that out, why that is. It's weird. Getting that comfort met is so scary for me. Whether it's physical or even words of affirmation, like whether I'll doubt someone for it or even the physical touch, maybe I don't want it from that person. Yeah. I don't know. Have you been hot and cold, or you really are? How you like it is how you like it, no matter who it's from.
I think as long as it's genuine, I think that's the only reason that it would ever change for me. Is that like if I'm with my ex, I'm going to kick my dog out of the room. He's just being a grump right now. Sorry. One second. There. Intermission while I move a 12-pound grump.
We can all watch and judge her on this. There we go. We got a little guest appearance from Zeus. Words of affirmation sent.
I was so mad.
And she held her boundary.
What was that?
Nothing. I made zero comments at all.
Huh? Sure.
Welcome back.
I closed the door, so now we have lack of continuity. I'm sorry.
No, you're good.
Is that going to be a problem?
No, I made commentary that I did not make commentary on.
Okay.
Yeah.
Anyways, no, I think my love languages will stay the same as long as I feel like the person is genuine. With my ex, I think I always was trying to get words of affirmation from him because I was so unsure that he meant it when he would show it to me in any other way, that I would be like, did he do the laundry because he was angry that I didn't do it? Did he expect me to do it? And so then he just went ahead and did it. I felt so unsure that then when he did give me words of affirmation, I would question him and be like, did you just say that? Because you thought that I wanted to hear that. And looking back on it, I don't know, maybe he did just say it because he knew that that's what I needed and not because he really meant it, which feels shitty, quite honestly. That's the only reason that it'll change for me, is that if it's genuine. But if it's genuine, then I don't really care who it's coming from as long as I mean it.
That's a great answer. I think this is one of those moments where the theme of the whole podcast, where I'm asking questions to express myself and see if it comes from someone else in the universe too. You highlighted that. So would you say feeling deregulated is what you felt with that ex? So you didn't really always feel safe, right?
Yeah, he was very hot and cold though. So it was like, I would get like the love bomb and then it would like peter out, and then we just have like massive fights that were awful and pull the rug out from underneath you fights. And then we'd be like, okay, we're done then. Fine. Never mind. We're just going to break up. And they'd be like, no, I love you. I could never live without you. And then it was like rinse and repeat, the love bomb. And we'd spend 3 days just like together, like we just survived a war. And then we'd go back to it. So yeah, I was very deregulated with that relationship because it was like all over the place.
Yeah. So stuff like that, when it's overwhelming, deregulating, and you just feel lost in emotions. Yeah, that's when you question what how you want your needs to be met and whether it's coming from the right person with the right energy too. Yeah, being genuine, I think that caps it as that. Yeah. If someone's being genuine in the way they're showing the way you want to be received love, I think that is the most beautiful way to accept it too and to be given.
Yeah, 100%.
So your current boyfriend doesn't seem like a loser. He's a nice guy, but he also goes out and gets what he wants. He leads and seems like the real definition of a nice guy versus the insecure, manipulative man that claims to be a nice guy just to get what he wants in disguise, then hates on women for not choosing the nice guy. Meanwhile, they went in with all the wrong intentions to begin with versus someone that lives forward with his intentions.
What a trope, the nice guy that just shouts that he's a nice guy, but never really is. Yeah. No, a phrase that my boyfriend uses a lot that I've adapted is divine masculinity instead of toxic masculinity, because I have found myself shockingly able to step into my more feminine side. I'm like very much a control person. That's why like I take care of everybody in my life and I'm in control of the situation. I have the directions. I know what's going on. And with him, I'm just like we're traveling in other countries. I have no idea where the hotel is. I don't know what train we're getting on. He's carrying the bags. I'm living my life. And I'm so comfortable with it because I know he's got it. And so he allows me to step into my space of allowing somebody to take care of me because he is in his divine masculinity and he's never going to mansplain or rub it in my face or make me feel incompetent because he knows I can handle everything if I want to. He just chooses to take care of some things and I choose to take care of other things. And it's a very big difference. We'll make jokes about like mansplaining, but he truly like trusts that I'm competent. And I know that when I do need to ask for help from him, it's not that. It's not the mansplaining nice guy trope that you hear.
And it was interesting. This is a question that a lot of men have. And so it's a question that I've always been seeking answers to. And I'm starting to understand it more. Is what does it mean when a woman wants a man to lead?
That's a good question. I think my answer has probably changed quite a bit in the last year, to be quite honest, because I will honestly say my answer is probably quite a bit different than a lot of women's answer, because I think a lot of women leadership from the male standpoint for a lot of women feels like financial security. And so a lot of women would answer that question with, I want the man to be able to take care of everything financially. For me, that's really not what that means. I think the ability to lead is the ability to help me feel safe. Unfortunately, we live in a world where 99% of the time I'm not safe just existing as a woman. And having a man who's aware of that and looking out for me is my ideal of leading, that I know that he's going to pick the safest thing for me, that when we're traveling, he has his eyes out for anybody. If I put my phone in my back pocket, he's taking it out of my back pocket and I'll put it in my front pocket. Like somebody's going to steal your phone. Pay attention. And so he has my back on a lot of those aspects and just making sure that I get home safe and things like that. I think to me, that's what leadership looks like, and taking control of the wheel whenever I'm overwhelmed, just noticing that and stepping in instead of being like, I don't know, what do you need help with? He will just see what needs to be taken care of and handle it. And I think, unfortunately, a lot of men, you know, just act like they use weaponized incompetence. They're like, I don't know, just tell me what you need done and I'll do it. And you're like, that's part of the reason I'm overwhelmed. I just want you to figure it out and get it done. So that's also a form of leadership, is just filling in the roles that you need to.
I was, and a part of me is still that man that is like, oh, I don't know, what do you want to do? And we'll just go from there. Like, we'll figure it out. But it's interesting, through dance, I've learned why it's important to lead and make those decisions for someone else. For a woman to be in her flow state in dance or in life, she does not make the decisions. You make the decisions for her and give it to her and see if it's comparable with her, and she goes with the flow.
That's such a good metaphor.
Yeah, I genuinely did not understand. Like, why can't you just fucking, we're going to somewhere to eat. Just, do you agree with this? Do you agree or not? But with leading in dance, I was like, oh, there's something really good about when you're a little bit more confident in your steps, in your pressure on the lead, every little part of it. Some flow happens with whoever's following, or in, you know, relationship, whoever's submitting to you. Like, your femininity has come out way more because you trust him more in the decisions he makes and the way he protects you. And I've just seen that through dancing. Like, oh, I see that now. Because as a beginner lead, you sometimes obviously want to blame the follow, like, why are they not following? And the same thing in the real world. Oh, why is she not just also helping make decisions? Come on, you're a human being. Obviously, you're capable of this, right? And then you go through it and you do it. That's where it is.
Yeah. That's such an interesting thing, too, because, like, my partner and I, we go swing dancing. And I'm a dancer. That's what I do. But partner dancing is hard for me because I have to let somebody lead. And I'm like, no, I have my own ideas. And so it's tough for me to take those cues because sometimes I'm just in my own little world. And so we've had that a lot where he's like, when I'm pushing on your back here, I need you to turn. Like, I'm stepping this way and I'm telling you. And you're, okay, I'll step out of the way so we can both move this way. Yeah, it's a really good metaphor for life. And it's so helpful when you view it as that, because then it's, oh, if we're taking cues and giving cues, then everybody can comfortably move. It's the same in life.
Yeah. And you're one of those accountable human beings where you do view it like that. There's a part of you that also has to allow for that in general to be able to receive a good lead. So you have to have yourself open for that. But same thing for a man to take accountability. I got humbled fairly well in life and in dance. In dance, when another lead, I've let like other leads lead me, so other men usually, because you learn a lot kind of feeling how it's supposed to go. One guy's like, hey, can I show you how that goes? He showed me, and it was like a sensual bachata dance too. So he showed me, I was like, oh my God, that felt perfect. And this is a complex move. How did you do that so perfectly? And he didn't look like he was forcing me into anything either. Seeing that in dance. Yeah. And then in life, you and one other friend that has a healthy man besides them that has the masculinity that makes the decisions, but also has the empathy and the desire to build a relationship rather than look for the perfect relationship out there. So all those things, seeing it in real life, is giving me more examples, which also humbles me that, oh, maybe there's a different way to be a man and to be a leader.
100%. I think we get so caught up in the culture of what a man is and like what manhood is. And I just loved the year of the Barbie movie that we all got the chance to talk about that a little bit more, because we're like, no, we don't hate masculinity. Duh. Straight women love masculinity. We hate when you're toxic. There's a big difference. And so I like that it's a little bit more of a comfortable conversation. And society as a whole seems to be adjusting to accepting a different meaning from that. And so it's not just like, man up and don't show any emotions. It's a lot more open and receptive to taking cues and giving cues. And I think it's a really wonderful thing. I'm excited to see the transition of it.
Having those comfortable conversations is one of the biggest goals I hope to inspire with the podcast. We don't have the Barbie movie budget, but at the same time, a normal human being admitting that he's working on being a man, leading better, and accepting that he wasn't that person where he was one of those insecure men that would be the nice guy and be a woman's best friend just to get what he wants, essentially, right? And now seeing the other side. But if I didn't get humbled, and if I wasn't open to being humbled on that, through examples of other people being in healthier relationships and then taking a step back and saying, maybe I could mirror something like that and then eventually lead that. those are the conversations I even want to have on this. And hopefully those clips go out and helps another man step back and maybe think, hey, women are not evil. All those podcasts that you see that just hate on women. Some of it, I'm not going to lie. Like, I might get canceled for this. Some of it I agree with, but a lot of it, it's holy shit. Y'all are taking this too far. You live like this and you'll never find happiness in life. Forget just a relationship, but that's zero accountability. So that's why I want to have conversations like this with someone else that has opinions on subjects like this.
Yeah, it's important to talk about. Even if you do disagree, it's so important to have conversations and figure out why you do disagree, because it might teach you that you agree a little bit more than you think you do. Because I have these conversations all the time with my best friend. We're on the opposite sides of the political scale, but we always talk about things because I respect her so much and she's such an intelligent woman and she does her research. And so whenever she says something that's way out of right field, I'm like, okay, why? And then we have the chance to talk about it and I explain my side and we're both like, oh, actually, we both want the same thing. We just think there's two different ways to go about getting that done. And it's such an eye opener. And I've applied that to a lot of aspects in life that I think those guys with the podcast that are hating all of the women, sometimes they actually agree with me and I agree with them. They just think that they're going to get to the same solution to the problem in a different way than I think that we're going to get there. And at the end of the day, we both agree that there's a problem and there is a solution. We just don't agree on how to get there.
We create our own division and then we blame the media for doing it. No, it's a human thing. We're creating our own division. We want the same things. Yeah. You are me, I am you, just under different circumstances.
Yeah, our media reassures it a lot, though, because we like it when we hear somebody repeat something that we think. We're like, yeah, that's right. And so then we end up with Fox News and CNN because people are like, yeah. And then you get stuck in it. You get stuck in your little like hole of what that narrative is. And it's easy to start blaming the media, but they're just doing what keeps the views up.
I kind of wanted to say that I took control of my algorithm so that I'm not influenced one way or another. But the truth is just circumstance in my life led me to having friends on both the left and the right side. So I stayed pretty neutral by not making any decisions and just observing. But now I'm starting to make my own decisions and viewing both. And it really comes down to you are me, I am you. We're the same under different circumstances. We just want the same thing. Let's have that talk and get there.
Yeah, it's important. And I feel like social media is so the algorithms will feed us what we what they know we want to keep watching too. I've noticed that. But I feel like my TikTok, I try to search things to balance it back out because I want to see both sides. If I'm watching more liberal-minded videos and liking them, then I'm like, wait, let me click on this hashtag and see what other people are saying about it from the other side, because I don't want to just have that one thing in my face and blindly agree with it.
Would you go on a second date even if you didn't feel a spark on the first date?
It depends. There's a lot of different circumstances to that. I say it depends on your reason for going on the first date. If your reason for going on the first date was that you saw a lot of potential, if a friend set you up and thought they both saw something in both of you, then yeah, go on the second date. Continue to see if maybe there was just like first date jitters or whatever. Maybe you didn't get the best image of them, but it depends. If you just went on the date to be like, it's good for the plot, and then it goes, no, that wasn't great, then yeah, maybe scrap it and move on to the next. But what do you think? Do you go on a second date if you're like, I don't know?
I fully agree with you. But also, I guess it depends on what your gut, how good your gut is, right? That's part of it. But it's also nuanced because my gut's been wrong many times on that. The second date thing, you know, there was a girl that before even dating, and this was the ex that I got hung up on, I initially thought all the times we hung out before going on an official date, it was great. She was fun, but shy and reserved. I thought she'd be boring if we went on an actual date. Cause I was like, okay, what do we do now? You come to see me DJ and then you hang out. You don't drink. I don't drink. You don't let me buy you anything like Dr. Pepper. You just drink your Dr. Pepper. You sit there and you literally just hug on me while I'm DJing. Like, that's amazing. That sounds great. But what happens when we go out? is this going to be any funner? Like sometimes we just don't even talk and we enjoy the silence, which for me could be a little tough. Like, how are we enjoying the silence? That was a beautiful moment in hindsight. But I was actually worried about, man, should we even go out? And because we did, she just showed me a whole different side of her. And she ended up being one of the most funnest human beings I've ever spent time with. And that set a new standard for how I could be compatible with someone on, like, it showed me what type of personality I might even want in a human being and how much fun that can be. And of course, that ended up being the most chemistry I've ever had with a human being was that date. I still remember it. It's almost 2 years ago, to this date, to this month. Wow. And I remember that day perfectly. And I almost said no to that even happening.
Do you believe in love at first sight?
Love at first sight? Not actual love at first sight. Lust at first sight, for sure, but not actual love at first sight. Not anymore. I used to, but not anymore.
Did that exchange with going on that second date and then realizing you actually did have a lot of chemistry with her, did that change your mind about love at first sight, or have you always felt that way?
Did I like fall in love in that date as a first sight? Is that what you're saying?
Like the idea of love at first sight. Did you used to believe that it was a thing? And so therefore, if you didn't have a moment on the first date, that you'd be like, okay, it's not going to happen. After that, did that kind of change your mind and be like, oh, okay, maybe it doesn't have to be surrounded.
I didn't even put that together. Interesting. Right. Yeah. I'm brown. So all the Bollywood movies are, as soon as you meet someone, the same day you go chase them at the airport and tell them, let's get married. Yeah. Yeah. That's a norm. So you can't help but be influenced by that, especially when that's what's shown as love. Rom-coms are something that's a favorite of mine. So that was a long time belief. Yeah. Yeah. I didn't even think about it like that. So you nailed it. Yeah. That was the impression. I was like, if I don't already have that feeling about you, like really quickly, it's not happening. And interesting.
I'm going to ask you the most California question. What's your sign?
I do my best not to tell anyone. And obviously, there's only 8 or 10 signs. It can't define humanity, but it's pretty accurate for mine. Scorpio.
Okay, there it is. I was going to guess that or a Sagittarius. Sagittarius are like known to just want to scrap things and start over. I don't know how much weight I feel like any of that holds, but I always think it's fun when it actually lines up. And I'm like, aha!
it can end up being really accurate. What made you think Scorpio for me?
Just that comment of you saying that you used to be like, if it wasn't there right away, then no, because I feel like Scorpios are very much like decisive and will stick to their guns and will be sometimes like really stubborn about things because they'll make decisions right away and be like, no, I hate that person. No, I love this person. And so that's what I thought initially.
Yeah, that leads me into the next question, which is that date, as amazing as it went with that human being, she had already warned me that she is not going for relationships and she will just pretty much never be in a relationship. We ended up watching the sunset together on top of the reunion tower, and that really broke her down. Yeah, I planned a whole date. It was amazing. Yeah, yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Wait, I want to hear more about the date. Wait,
I'll give you a little snippet. We both shared intelligent conversations. It was never boring, right? So I said, okay, Perot Museum would be a good way to start the date. It's interactive museum and we can probably have a lot of fun there. Sure enough, her personality really bubbled out there. And there's an entire level dedicated to crystals and bitches love crystals. I was like, oh, you can't go wrong.
Take so that bitch to go look at some rocks.
Goddamn right. It worked. And the entire reason I bought the membership at the Perot Museum is, okay, bitches love crystals. We can't go wrong. So that's how it started. And then for lunch/early dinner plans, she's a vegan. So I scoured every single vegan restaurant in all of DFW and found the best ones, TikTok, and it worked out. I found a great vegan restaurant that she had not been to yet. And on the way, I did a playlist of songs, and some of it like strung her hearts from like back to childhood songs.
Wow. So, wait, how did you decide what to put on the playlist?
I just went for it. I just felt like this would be a good mix. And it was an actual mix. Yeah.
Such a great idea. I don't know that I've really heard of anybody thinking to do that for the car ride on a date, but make a playlist. That's a great tip. Take notes.
Yeah, I wanted every moment of it to be special. And that was the first time, I would say that's the first real date I went on with intentions of wanting it to be more. And that was me at 25 years old, you know? So after dinner. I didn't tell her what we were about to do next, but I gave her some hints. She told me she's scared of heights as soon as we got to the museum, but I had already bought the tickets for the reunion tower. Everything was already planned.
You're inside. It's not like you took her bungee jumping. It's fine.
But right? Once we got to the parking lot of the reunion tower, she's, oh no, you got to cancel. We can't do this. I'm like, oh, this was expensive. Hope. So how about we just walk in and you just at least take a look, like it's elevators, like it's really safe. She's like, we can walk in, but this is making me really nervous. I'm like, I'm not going to make you do anything that's unsafe and you don't really want to, but can we give it a shot and we just see how it goes? So this was a massive fear of hers. Even the Pearl Museum, just going up escalators was actually terrifying. So she hugged on me the entire time, just going up the escalators. She was scared. That's how adorable it was. She was gripping on it. So she
to
was
be fair, those escalators are intense.
Huh? Yeah.
To be fair, those escalators are intense. Yeah. They're right there next to the glass of the building, and there it's a long escalator.
Oh yeah, you've been there. So yeah, it's a beautiful view, but yeah, it can be, if you're scared of heights, that's terrifying.
Yeah.
So we make it into the bottom deck of the reunion tower. There's a long line. She's like nervous, but she's already broken some of her fear with me. She's considering doing more of it. And we get to the photo booth area and her entire anxiety seems to drop and we take an amazing picture that I still remember till this day. Like her being goofy and me being completely goofy enough to where the photographer pulled us aside and commented on how beautiful that was. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was crazy. Then we wait on the couch next to an elevator because she's not too sure if she's ready. Some other older guy comes up and compliments us just on how we're being. And she finally gets in the elevator. She's like, okay, let's try. She was wearing a sundress and I acted like it got caught on the elevator just to terrify her even more. Maybe that was a bad idea. Yeah, everybody else in the elevator hated me for it and they also laughed, but it worked out. Okay. And so she hugged on me the entire elevator ride up tight, not wanting to look through the windows. And then eventually she looked a little bit and she started to calm down. We walk out of the elevators. She's scoping the area out. She's not as terrified because it's a really safe place. Like you can't really jump off. You can't really get to the edge. So she starts to calm down a little bit. We're talking. Sunset starting to happen. And she just looks at me and says, look at what you did. I just came to see you DJ. And now you have me up here. Like we weren't even supposed to be here. We weren't even supposed to be on this date. And look at everything you did today. That Aww. Day, yeah, it keeps repeating in my head. And that was a lot of affection that came out. Obviously, we're making out. Tons of her breaking her own barriers that she had set for herself.
That's honestly your patience to sit with her and make sure she was ready and not push her, but just encourage to help her get over that fear is so important. And I feel like a lot of other people don't have that patience, especially if they're like, bitch, I bought these tickets. Everybody and their mama wants to go to the reunion tower at sunset. I got the timing for it, right? Get on the elevator. A lot of people would just be like, fine then, whatever. So to have the patience to sit with her and encourage, that is taking the lead. That's a wonderful example of us. We're just talking about what does that mean for men to take the lead like that right there.
I appreciate you noticing and appreciating that because you're right. It does tie back in. That's one of those days I did feel like I was a good leader. It really did tie in because I had to also time it to make sure we were on time to be on the sunset.
It's like, you're watching the clock.
Yeah. And I somehow did it all without making her feel rushed on any of it. And she commented, I just remember now she did comment on that. She's like, how did you pull all of this off in the timing? And it was beautiful. And we just stayed there for the longest. We were almost the last one to leave. Like security had to get us. Like we just, there was such a silent moment. And she wouldn't get to the edge, but she'd just be behind me and hug on me the entire night. After that, I don't know, this was almost like 8 hours of us hanging out. Neither of us wanted the night to end. We find a place that has like vegan ice cream. We get her that. And then we go to a park at way, way late in the night. And for the first time, someone makes me sit on the grass instead of a park bench. That was like a new concept for me too. So we just sit down on the grass at night, looking at the moon and the stars together for probably a couple more hours. It was a 12-hour date. And then dropped her home.
That's incredible. That's a great date. That's like what every girl would try to make a date be if they could, but I feel like a lot of guys just don't participate in that way. But that's great.
Thank you. Yeah. That concludes the date story. It's hard not to reminisce on it. It was a really impactful day and the most chemistry I'd ever had. But it's also something that now there's 2 years passed. And of course, since she already made the decision not to commit, as even though that date broke so many of her barriers and she was really sinking into it, eventually, since she had already made such strong boundaries and she was older than me, so she was already set in her ways somewhat. Eventually, she came back to that dismissive part and we were going back and forth on text. A couple of days would go by and just things just ended up the way she said it would be in the original part where there was no commitment. But of course, I abandoned myself and I kept chasing anyway, especially after a date like that. It's hard not to chase for that. So that ended up being the biggest heartbreak of my life. Yeah. So still working on getting over her, made a video about that. And now I'm starting to see something different is obsessing over people that don't choose you. It's you're allowed to be sad about it, but the guy like on that book right there, Matthew Hussey, I don't even read. I've never read a book. I've never bought a book. I bought his book because he said you're allowed to be sad over a breakup, over a heartbreak, over a loss, but you can't grieve as if that's the person that was supposed to be your life partner, because if they were your life partner, they would have chosen you also. And she didn't choose me. I chose her, but she didn't choose me. Have you went through that? Like having way too much grief over someone that didn't even choose you?
Yes and no. I was married previously. So the ex, the roller coaster relationship that I mentioned earlier, that was my ex-husband. And I think I did that while in a marriage, which is wild. But I was very much like chasing him. And I really urged us to get married because I had moved all the way to Texas with him. And we spent a year there. And I was like, okay, either you're going to commit to me fully or I'm going to dip out because this is, you're asking for wifey things. And so we ended up eloping and getting married. And then it was really just, I thought I would feel so much better once we were married, that I would feel like secure, that he wanted me. I would feel assured by that. And I just really didn't, because that is a piece of paper. Like at the end of the day, it's a piece of paper. And so I just continually was doing that with him. And that cycle went on for 5 years. And I just finally, after 2020 really sent me through some learning, healing journey I wasn't prepared for. I got to know myself a lot better. And just as I started to go through that, I realized that I was like, no, I love myself and I wouldn't treat myself this way. So I shouldn't let somebody else. And also being alone is way better than sitting here like having anxiety over whether or not this person loves and cares about me. Why am I doing this? Being alone would be better. And that, along with a plethora of other reasons, I ended up leaving and very much was like, ah, yes, silence is great. This is fine. And I think he did that and I loved without it being reciprocated, even though I was technically in a committed relationship. So I can understand in a very weird way.
Yours was a 5-year loop. And mine is a 2-year loop, but of course, we didn't have that much involvement. But it's crazy how impactful those moments were, only for us to at least be able to use it and become who we are today. It's almost in a way, if those things didn't happen, would we be the person we are today? So as hard as it was for me to say that story about the date and even reflect on her in a good way, not really. She was still a great human being, but there's a lot of pain that is still there from that point in my life, because my dad also had a stroke like 2 weeks after that. And there was like a lot of chaos and life just changed. Yeah. So it was like a lot of just drama. I can't be thankful enough because that guy right there, Matthew Hussey, I discovered his videos in YouTube, just punching it in, just realizing how to navigate giving up on someone that isn't choosing you. And this was December. We had went on our date in May. So that was a long time. We just kept going back and forth. If I didn't discover his videos, it wouldn't have led me to therapy. 8 months of therapy had changed my life entirely. And those 8 months of therapy, if that didn't happen, I wouldn't have this podcast. because the podcast just doesn't happen without my mind being better. I've tried it before. And if it wasn't for the podcast happening, I wouldn't have this beautiful part of my life. This conversation wouldn't happen. The friends I have, the connection I have. And for the first time, instead of having only one person I can be myself around, which was that woman from 2 years ago, that I could have this type of conversation with, now I can have that with you, many other people, and potentially an entire audience. None of those would have happened without that.
Yeah. I feel like also those lessons that you need to learn, you learn them one way or another if you're open to them. And rather or not any of that would have happened, at some point you would have stumbled on a different domino that would have caused that. And I firmly believe that. But that also helps me not feel regret for making maybe poor choices. I got married really young and then chose to get a divorce. And I don't feel the guilt of that because I know like those tough lessons were going to be learned either way. That's just how that's where life took me. That was the path that I had to learn them on. And so they're hard, but it sticks with you. You get a little piece from it and then you get to carry, that's the domino. It sets off the next thing and the next thing, and you learn more in life and you grow, and it can turn into a really beautiful thing.
It's beautiful. And you're right. The dominoes would happen either way. That is life. It's sometimes it feels predestined almost that eventually you're going to learn those lessons. But I view therapy in a way where if you introduce therapy into your life, it almost feels like you learn those lessons a little quicker almost because you have a guide. It's almost like you have someone giving you private lessons in life to just get your timing down a little bit at least. Feel that?
Yeah. It's good to have somebody walk you through the thought process. And it depends on what kind of therapy you go to, but it's so important to have the assistance of somebody asking you the right questions to lead you to the right place, and then pointing out the things that maybe you make excuses for in your life. And there's a lot of things that I've done that over. And I had a wonderful therapist when I was living in Texas, and she'd call out little things. I would say things and she'd go, bop, 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 bop. And I go, what? She goes, say that again. And I'd be like, it's fine because I'm really busy and it's okay that I didn't make time for that. Are you saying that because you don't want it to hurt your feelings? Or is it actually fine? And it's fine. And she would just make me repeat the things that I'm saying to myself and just figure it out. So it's helpful.
Yeah, it's interesting how much therapy is just them telling you make your own decisions, but actually come to your own decision. It's such as if you just watched it from like an alien perspective, like who's dumb here? Like who's being dumber? I was like, no, humans just can't break down all the walls and masks and barriers they put up for themselves just to see clarity. That's really a part of therapy, is just bringing more clarity to your own decisions. Yours was a long journey, and I don't think have you ever actually dated where you're seeing multiple people, letting everyone have a fair shot, all those things? Did you ever get a chance to do that?
Honestly, not really. After I split from my ex, I had a little moment where I was like, cool, I'm by myself. I'm single. I was living alone for the first time, living my life. And I had really just a couple of people that I gone on dates with. And then I was out in LA and met up with my now current partner. And we were just hanging out as friends. And I'd known him for a while before. And then after we got coffee, he was like, since you're single, I feel like I should tell you. I've always had a crush on you. So just do with that what you will. And so I was like, oh, okay, this changes things. And without going into the whole long story about that, but it happened very quickly on accident. So I never really dated. I had intended to spend some time just chilling and being me. And then he just came out of the left field and whapped me upside the head. And I was like, wow, this is the other half of me in front of me. That's crazy. So escaped it. I've never had an online dating profile or anything. So
you did escape it because you're in such a good position and found such a great partner. But if you were back in the dating scene, not for this, just let's say before you met him, because we don't even want to think about that. How do you feel about the whole appropriate dating is dating many times, even a month, with obviously different people? That just seems like a foreign concept to me because I haven't dated like that. I haven't actually, dated. So it feels like cheating almost when you're going on dates with different human beings every week, even though the healthy answer is obviously you're looking for your person. You don't want to end up in a 5-year loop, 2-year loop. You don't want to end up in those positions again. And the healthiest thing to do is give everyone a fair shot and give yourself a fair shot. But the feeling, it feeling like cheating almost, let's say if you are dating someone for a month, but you're still playing the field in a healthy way and you're not sleeping around, but just doing that kind of feels like cheating. And maybe you do get intimate with two partners. Has that thought ever crossed your mind?
Yeah, I don't think that in the past, I think I would totally be uncomfortable with that. I think now being more sure of myself and who I am, that doesn't upset me as much because you're not really, when you're dating, you're not sharing your life with anybody, because that's what being in a relationship is. It's not just I, it's we. And so you choose to share that. And so when you're dating, you're like, no, this is still me and this is mine. And I go see these people and I go do these things. And you go see those people and do those things. And that's your life. And until you decide that we want to share lives together, then it's not. And I don't view it any different, rather or not there's sexual intimacy in it, because I think that's human nature and that plays a huge part in connecting with the partner. And so I think as long as you're honest with yourself and honest with the partner that, like, you know, as soon as I had started seeing my partner more seriously, we had that conversation where I was like, I don't know if you're dating other people or seeing other people, but I'm going to choose not to because I really like you. And so I have somebody else that I'm talking to and I'm going to tell them I'm pumping the brakes on that because I really like you. And I can't, honestly, I just can't give anybody else my attention but you right now because I just can't stop thinking about you. And he was like, yeah, I have a couple loose ends that I need to tie up. And then we did. And then we talked about it a couple days later. And we're like, cool, let's do this. And I think that's healthy. You just got to see what's good for you.
Thank you for highlighting that. I don't have any further comment on that. I will take your clip on that and probably watch it multiple times just for myself.
As reassurance?
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you feel like you have a lot of guilt that you have a hard time overcoming it when you're dating?
Yeah, I do. Yeah. Yeah, that guilt and shame. And that's absolutely what I'm working on in therapy.
Do you feel like you're leading your partners to believe that you're not seeing other people and that plays into you feeling guilty because it doesn't feel honest?
I haven't truly dated like that, but a part of me sees that scenario, yes, where am I supposed to even tell this other person that I'm, you know, going on another date tomorrow and be open about that? Which my most recent person that I dated, I was honest. Yes, I'm going on a date literally tomorrow. And she seemed to have zero problems with that. But I don't know if it was real, but inside my head, I'm like, that's making me feel guilty. Like already we had just been on one date and I let her know, yes, I'm going on another date tomorrow. That's why I can't see you again tomorrow. But yeah, it made me feel guilty, a little bit shame. And I did end up canceling on the second one, partially because of guilt and shame, but also because she wasn't curious about my podcasting journey at all. I was like, fuck you. She's like, I hate that you're on Instagram posting content. I was like, oh, okay, we're definitely not going to work out.
Well, yeah, that's the problem.
Yeah. Like date one immediately. Like, yeah, we're not going on a date. So that was like the majority of the reason, but still it was in my mind. Yeah. So you caught me there.
Yeah, I think that's fair because you care and you want to be genuine and honest with whoever you're dating. But it's also my friends that are actively dating. I live in Los Angeles, so that's like a whole other ballpark, I feel like, for the dating world. It's wild out here. So nobody has normal dating stories. And all of my friends are like, yeah, I got a roster. Like I got 7 people that like – they don't want to commit. These people want to commit too much. This guy just takes me to really nice places for dinner. So I'm just like, sure, let's give it a try. And it's really interesting, but I think everybody, it's become such a norm that everybody knows that you're likely going on dates with other people. And if they feel that's a problem for them, then they should know themselves enough to ask that question. And you can answer honestly. Otherwise, I don't really feel like it's a topic that needs to be even discussed because it's if it bothers you, say something. And if you can't manage to have that conversation, then you're probably not somebody who's mature enough to be dating to have a mature relationship with, because then you're just going to feed into a jealousy cycle, and it's not going to work out very well.
Wow. That is also a great point. Yeah. I'm still processing what you said from the other 2 minutes behind, and even from now, it's completely healthy. And that's the thing. Yeah. I tend to have that lustful view of, as soon as you talk to someone, that's the person, that's what you make it work with, and immediately latch on. It's like the fantasy loop starts happening in your head, right? You're fantasizing about the other person and they have zero idea of it, is how I used to really do things. And the part of that is still left. And it's probably why I still feel somewhat guilty in that dating stage, is nothing real has actually happened, but we're making it seem like that a relationship has begun. It was kind of eye-opening the way you said it. So yeah, a relationship hasn't even started. It sounds like common sense, but for me, that's like somewhat of a foreign concept, like just detaching from that old style.
Yeah. It's hard though with emotions, because you just get excited about it sometimes and get ahead of yourself.
That's fair. Yeah. You're protecting yourself. You're giving yourself the fair chance of everything coming together in a natural way. Making space for love in your heart. That's our theme.
Making space. Yeah. No, I laugh, but it's so true. Cause like you have to have room for that in your life. Otherwise it just does not work. Like you have to be open and understanding and leave so much space for patience and all of it.
One last question.
Okay.
Sleeping around that whole stage, either you've already had it or it's something you've thought about and adding more before you settle down, right? Those have all been thoughts. For you, how'd that go and where have you settled on?
I never really had much of a hoe phase, which is interesting because I look back at it thinking like, should I have? Would that have been helpful? The answer for me personally is I don't think it would have been helpful for me, because I don't think I would have learned anything from that I didn't learn from the relationships that I was in. I don't know. I don't really think I see it in my future either. I had a few partners before I got married, but it was always people that I like loved and trusted. And then afterwards, same, that I just people that I cared about. But yeah, I think it's really important for some people to like, quote unquote, get it out of their system. Cause I think some people need to taste all the flavors of ice cream before they can pick what scoop they want. And I do think for women particularly, I think we're just now as a society coming to terms with this, but you have to like learn how you like to have sex. And sometimes that's a little bit easier with partners that are not going to be insecure about it the next day. Being able to ask for what you want in the bedroom, sometimes that's a one night stand category, and you can be a little bit more wild and figure out what you need in the bedroom. And then you can carry that into your committed relationship if you decide to do that later and you know. And I think that's something that like I didn't learn till I was older, that I was like, oh, that was a game changer for me. Now I know what I need to ask my partner for. And I was like missing out on a whole side of sex. And so I think the whole phase is important for that. Like you are just figuring out how that works for your body. And I think it's good for people. But I also think I got to do that with my partner, that I like with my ex. I did a lot of that exploring with him. So that's my answer.
Yeah. Again, you've left two really outstanding things for anyone to ruminate on. And I'm very comfortable with closing in on that. Maddie, you've been very helpful on all of these topics and all these subjects. You've spoken with not only just passion, but true vulnerability. And you've shared the nuances of both male and female perspectives on this. You've highlighted everything I want from a series like this. I'm sure the entire audience and even your own audience that you're bringing into this will find a lot of value into this. So everyone, please share, comment. You can actually comment on the podcast, comment about how you liked it. This keeps us going. And this is a series that I'm really confident in. From the last test trial we did, I felt a natural high. For the first time in my life, the fantasies I have in my head of podcasting on topics that are so meaningful to me personally like this, and let alone sharing it with others and potentially an audience and co-host that genuinely want to do this every week, is the ultimate fantasy in my head. That is a number one fantasy in my head. And I'm living it. So I don't even have to wait for it to become hundreds or thousands or millions in the audience. I'm living it right now. So from a personal note, that means a lot. So Maddie, thank you for coming on.
Thank you. I love these conversations. You ask good questions and provide good space.
That means a lot.
Yeah. I'm excited. I think this whole series is so good. You're such a good podcast host that like you make it easy. So I'm excited to also hear the other guests that you have on and listen to it. So I agree. Everybody share it and come back next week. And also leave us some comments. Let us know if you have different opinions. I want to hear them.
Listen to Maddie. Deuces.